Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is Monday, April 7th, 2025. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening over Rumble or YouTube and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right side of a website of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on the donation tab, also on the top right-hand side of a website. Okay, we're going to pick up with some scripture reading tonight. We finished last week. And we're picking up in the Gospel of Luke. Let's see. Maximize pain. Okay, we're going to look at the Gospel of Luke. We're starting off with chapter 1, read by Alexander Squibby.
The Gospel according to St. Luke, chapter 1. For as much as many have taken in hand to set forth in order a declaration of those things which are most surely believed among us, even as they delivered them unto us, which from the beginning were eyewitnesses and ministers of the word, it seemed good to me also, having had perfect understanding of all things from the first, to write unto thee in order, most excellent Theophilus, that thou mightest know the certainty of those things wherein thou hast been instructed. There was in the days of Herod the king of Judea a certain priest named Zacharias of the course of Abiah, and his wife was of the daughters of Aaron, and her name was Elizabeth. And they were both righteous before God, walking in all the commandments and ordinances of the Lord blameless. And they had no child, because that Elizabeth was barren, and they both were now well stricken in years. And it came to pass that while he executed the priest's office before God in the order of his course, according to the custom of the priest's office, his lot was to burn incense when he went into the temple of the Lord. And the whole multitude of the people were praying without at the time of incense. And there appeared unto him an angel of the Lord standing on the right side of the altar of incense. And when Zacharias saw him, he was troubled, and fear fell upon him. But the angel said unto him, Fear not, Zacharias, for thy prayer is heard, and thy wife Elizabeth shall bear thee a son, and thou shalt call his name John. And thou shalt have joy and gladness, and many shall rejoice at his birth. For he shall be great in the sight of the Lord, and shall drink neither wine nor strong drink. And he shall be filled with the Holy Ghost, even from his mother's womb. And many of the children of Israel shall he turn to the Lord their God. And he shall go before him in the spirit and power of Elias, to turn the hearts of the fathers to the children, and the disobedient to the wisdom of the just, to make ready a people prepared for the Lord. And Zacharias said unto the angel, Whereby shall I know this? For I am an old man, and my wife well stricken in years. And the angel answering said unto him, I am Gabriel that stand in the presence of God, and am sent to speak unto thee and to show thee these glad tidings. And behold, thou shalt be dumb and not able to speak until the day that these things shall be performed, because thou believest not my words, which shall be fulfilled in their season. And the people waited for Zacharias, and marveled that he tarried so long in the temple. And when he came out, he could not speak unto them. And they perceived that he had seen a vision in the temple, for he beckoned unto them and remained speechless. And it came to pass that as soon as the days of his ministration were accomplished, he departed to his own house. And after those days his wife Elizabeth conceived, and hid herself 5 months, saying, Thus hath the Lord dealt with me in the days wherein he looked on me, to take away my reproach among men. And in the sixth month, the angel Gabriel was sent from God unto a city of Galilee named Nazareth, to a virgin espoused to a man whose name was Joseph of the house of David, and the virgin's name was Mary. And the angel came in unto her and said, Hail, thou that art highly favored, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women. And when she saw him, she was troubled at his saying, and cast in her mind what manner of salutation this should be. And the angel said unto her, Fear not, Mary, for thou hast found favor with God. And behold, thou shalt conceive in thy womb, and bring forth a son, and shalt call his name Jesus. He shall be great, and shall be called the Son of the Highest, and the Lord God shall give unto him the throne of his father David. And he shall reign over the house of Jacob forever, and of his kingdom there shall be no end. Then said Mary unto the angel, How shall this be, seeing I know not a man? And the angel answered and said unto her, The Holy Ghost shall come upon thee, and the power of the Highest shall overshadow thee. Therefore also that holy thing which shall be born of thee shall be called the Son of God. And behold, thy cousin Elizabeth, she hath also conceived a son in her old age, and this is the sixth month with her who was called barren. For with God nothing shall be impossible. And Mary said, Behold the handmaid of the Lord, be it unto me according to thy word. And the angel departed from her. And Mary arose in those days, and went into the hill country with haste into a city of Judah, and entered into the house of Zacharias, and saluted Elizabeth. And it came to pass that when Elizabeth heard the salutation of Mary, the babe leaped in her womb. And Elizabeth was filled with the Holy Ghost. And she spake out with a loud voice and said, Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb. And whence is this to me, that the mother of my Lord should come to me? For lo, as soon as the voice of thy salutation sounded in mine ears, the babe leaped in my womb for joy. And blessed is she that believed, for there shall be a performance of those things which were told her from the Lord. And Mary said, My soul doth magnify the Lord, and my spirit hath rejoiced in God my Saviour, for he hath regarded the low estate of his handmaiden. For behold, from henceforth all generations shall call me blessed. For he that is mighty hath done to me great things, and holy is his name. And his mercy is on them that fear him from generation to generation. He hath showed strength with his arm. He hath scattered the proud in the imagination of their hearts. He hath put down the mighty from their seats, and exalted them of low degree. He hath filled the hungry with good things, and the rich he hath sent empty away. He hath holpen his servant Israel in remembrance of his mercy, as he spake to our fathers, to Abraham, and to his seed forever. And Mary abode with her about 3 months, and returned to her own house. Now Elizabeth's full time came that she should be delivered, and she brought forth a son. And her neighbors and her cousins heard how the Lord had showed great mercy upon her, and they rejoiced with her. And it came to pass that on the eighth day they came to circumcise the child, and they called him Zacharias, after the name of his father. And his mother answered and said, Not so, but he shall be called John. And they said unto her, There is none of thy kindred that is called by this name. And they made signs to his father how he would have him called. And he asked for a writing table, and wrote, saying, His name is John. And they marveled all. And his mouth was opened immediately, and his tongue loosed, and he spake and praised God. And fear came on all that dwelt round about them. And all these sayings were noised abroad throughout all the hill country of Judea. And all they that heard them laid them up in their hearts, saying, What manner of child shall this be? And the hand of the Lord was with him. And his father Zacharias was filled with the Holy Ghost, and prophesied, saying, Blessed be the Lord God of Israel, for he hath visited and redeemed his people, and hath raised up an horn of salvation for us in the house of his servant David, as he spake by the mouth of his holy prophets, which have been since the world began, that we should be saved from our enemies, and from the hand of all that hate us, to perform the mercy promised to our fathers, and to remember his holy covenant. The oath which he sware to our father Abraham, that he would grant unto us, that we, being delivered out of the hand of our enemies, might serve him without fear, in holiness and righteousness before him all the days of our life. And thou, child, shalt be called the prophet of the Highest, for thou shalt go before the face of the Lord to prepare his ways, to give knowledge of salvation unto his people by the remission of their sins, through the tender mercy of our God, whereby the day spring from on high hath visited us, to give light to them that sit in darkness and in the shadow of death, to guide our feet into the way of peace. And the child grew and waxed strong in spirit, and was in the deserts till the day of his showing unto Israel.
Okay, Jen, do we have any questions tonight?
We have a number, yes.
Jen, do you mind if I make this one announcement real quick?
Go ahead.
Thank you, sir. I had a few good patriots. One was Andrew Media, who we know. She got us the interview with SGNON originally. And then she was telling me of this to help allay my frustration with the chemtrails. She's been giving me information on chemtrails. And then Martin, here in Georgia, he wanted me to report this number as well. I thought it was pretty cool that first I got it from Andrew Media and then Martin. But there is a new, or I should say, and there is a new EPA, and Jan, you probably know of this, National Response Center to Chemtrails. You can call this number and report them when you see them. And the number is 1-800-424-8802, 1-800-424-8802. As far as I know, it's new, and, you know, I'm the kind of individual who gets a little concerned about these kind of things, and that maybe it's just a way to pinpoint where all of our, well, where all of us true patriots are, but that's just me being a little paranoid, I think. But anyway, take it as you will. This is the information. I got it from two good patriots, and I yield.
Yeah, along that line, Tennessee, I believe, has already passed a law against spraying chemtrails. Florida Senate has just passed a law, and the governor says he'll sign that, so that'll be two states. And there are a number of other states that are considering it now, I think seven or eight. So maybe before too long we'll have some legislation statewide against chemtrails.
That would be wonderful, hopefully.
Yes, can't happen soon enough. Okay, first question, and I'm going to break these up. There's actually six parts. I'll try and combine a couple. We have a COS in Chester County, Pennsylvania. And we have a sheriff that is a Democrat and has been in law enforcement for 40-plus years. If he does not uphold the Constitution and common law, how do we go about finding a constitutional sheriff?
Well, by the way, am I coming through okay?
Yes, you're plenty loud, John.
All right. Well, look, you know, you got to give the guy a chance. He's as ignorant as all of us were. Some of us may still be. And, you know, we set up a process. One of the first order of business that the Committee of Safety is to do is to make contact with the sheriff after they put together all their necessary paperwork, like writing a charter and their resolutions. And then at some point, you know, meeting up with the sheriff. For a first meeting, shouldn't be any more than 5 or 10 minutes, just introducing yourself, giving them a copy of your resolution and your charter, and also give them a copy of the book, Government by Consent. And also there's a couple of handbooks, you know, for sheriffs, so maybe you can give them that. And let them know, look, we're going to invite you to speak to us maybe in about 4 to 6 weeks. And that's it. You know, then the next time you meet with them, hopefully, well, I presume he realizes he's going to want to read the book, at least skim through it, and hopefully it'll turn him. If not, recall is the only solution. But, of course, you need to be building up membership. You want to have at least 15 or 20 or more people together for the meeting, you know, the second meeting with the sheriff, hopefully more than 20, but, you know, at least 20 people, roughly speaking. And you know, to him, you're a potential constituent. So, again, you know, you might turn him. And being a Democrat doesn't necessarily mean anything really as terrible as we've been listening to what's going on with the Democrats in Washington, D.C., and even in some state legislatures and governors and so on and so forth. The problem is not with the Democrats in themselves. The problem is the leadership of the Democrats. And we have the same problem with some Republican leaderships. Excuse me. But anyway, that's the process. So where do you get a sheriff from? Well, your meeting, as your meeting goes and as your meeting grows, there will be some people who will be interested in running for office, and you're going to have to look for someone. I think someone should eventually rise up among us within our committees of safety that would want to run for particular offices, and one of them might be sheriff. Or you can look around and see once what else you can find. I mean, maybe there's other people who've run for sheriffs before. You can, you know, look that up in history on your through the computer and maybe make contact with those individuals, see where they're coming from, and maybe if they want to consider running for sheriff again. So anyway, that's about all we can do. But again, recall is the key, and getting another and you know, running a recall is going to cause a vacancy, and that will cause people to enter into the race for that election of that position. So that's another way someone could be found. Of course, you want to interview all of these individuals that would want to run in that race for sheriff, and give them a copy of the books and see once who's going to really respond to that. So anyway, that's the answer for that. Next.
Okay, second part. How do we make sure we have an Article 3 court?
Well, interesting. We're going to talk a little bit about that after the questions. Let's put that. Right now we don't have really an Article 3 court per se. I mean, you know, Article 3 particularly, okay. That, of course, is the power and the authority. Let me pull this open here, Article 3. Yeah, it talks about the judicial power, the power and the authority of the Supreme Court, and the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity. We're going to talk about that in a little while, so I'm going to lay that aside. Go ahead, Jen.
Okay. This is two parts. How do we convene a grand jury, and who can convene a grand jury?
Well, anyone can convene a grand jury. Whether they're going to listen is another question. That's why we're working on these things, trying to get our courts of justice back and allowing the people back into the courts to take control of gathering together not only the grand jury but the petit jury and giving them an orientation. That's why we put together the plan to bring in administrators for the juries, looking for four people for each county, and a fifth person being a paralegal, who would also be also an administrator. And so we need actually five people for each county when you include the paralegal. And the purpose of those 4 to 5 people is to orientate the juries. In common law, it should be the people, not an elected individual, certainly not a judge and certainly not a prosecutor or even any lawyer, per se, particularly bar attorneys. It should be to the people themselves, and we want to return back to the people. And again, that's part of our plan we're working on. You can get more information on that on Start a Committee of Safety and get down into the handbooks, videos, and tools, and you'll find a handbook on some of this information that we're talking about now. You know, we have a handbook on coming together and bringing this together. We talk about this, I believe we talk about this in the COS handbook. And we're also, I started working on a book specifically for people who want to run for that position. And again, it's a full-time job. You'd be working right out of the courthouse. But first, we have to win the courts back, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that after the questions. So we'll kind of set the rest of that aside and maybe give some more information on that when we talk about that shortly. Next question.
How do we convene a grand jury without a constitutional sheriff?
Well, again, you don't necessarily need a constitutional sheriff per se to bring a grand jury together. A grand jury can form on its own. The problem is people don't really understand and maybe don't have the necessary education concerning the common law and the process, the procedure, and how you'd write the paperwork if you decide to have a, if you decide to send someone in for trial to indict somebody. The ideal thing, of course, is to operate in the courts, and that's what we're working on. I'm not encouraging people to pursue grand juries right now, but I am encouraging people to become educated and potentially take those positions. We've got a lot of people, if you look on the right-hand side of our website here, we've got a lot of people who want to become grand jury administrators. Right now we've got 1,269 people signed up for that. I don't know how many of those people are still active. At some point in time, we need to start contacting those individuals and checking to see if they've been working to get their proper education and if they still have an interest. Right now, we don't have the ability to do that yet. We're seeking funds, and if we can get the funds enough to go professional, that's when we'd be able to really put the manpower into that particular, job of making contact. Also, we'd like to make contact with all of our committees of safety. Right now, let's see, how many committees of safety have we got going here? Administrators, committee of safety organizers. Okay, we got just 201, one over 200, so 201 committees of safety in process, people who have recorded that they're in the process of creating committees of safety. We need a total of 3,134 or 33. And again, we don't necessarily have to have that many, but that's how many counties we have. It would be ideal to have one for every county. There are certain counties where very few people live in, so it wouldn't make sense. Certain counties, maybe up in Alaska, and maybe up in the Northeast here, in certain places where, there's very few people living in the counties. It's kind of a lot of wilderness. You have the same thing in places out west. So we're not necessarily planning that we'll have all 3,134, but maybe we'll have 3,000. Maybe that's the achievable number. We'll see how that goes. But that really is, the focus of what we're trying to do to get these committees of safety going. And again, we will educate the people. They need to be in the process of educating. Of course, right now we have the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury that is, operating. We've filed lots of papers, and we've done lots of indictments. We've filed them all accordingly. And things haven't happened yet at this point, but we're going to talk a little more about that after these questions. So that'll be also part of something we want to talk about. Okay, next question.
How do you feel about Dave Roberts and Reinhabited Republic, Sandy Moran? And they have a valid role.
Somebody
put an extra mic open.
We've had some contact with those people. I know there's a division among those groups, and we may consider working with one if we can work something out with them. One of the problems is that they're working on grand juries also, and they're doing it in an improper way. And I'm going to try to make contact with one of the contacts we've spoken with. We spoke with them. When did we do that? About 2 weeks ago, Dan? We spoke with
lots. 3 weeks, no.
Yeah. I'm going to try to make contact with the original person I made contact with to see if they're willing to compromise on this, because one of the things that they're doing, which is really re-inhabiting, is the states. There's a part of them, another part of the group that is looking to re-inhabit also the national level. I'm in disagreement with that. I don't think we'd want to support that. But the other side of the group is not planning to pursue that, just to try to put things together in the states. I think we can offer them a lot of information and a different way to proceed to do exactly what they're thinking of doing, but a little bit of a different way to proceed, which would be much safer, because we want to be careful that we don't do something that could be looked at as subversion. Their way of doing something with the grand jury would be in conflict with what we're doing and the trial jury. I think it would be very confusing to people to, you know, work with that particular situation with one group doing it, and then we're doing it a totally different way. And we can get into more details of that if people have more questions very specifically on the differences or questions about that particular subject. But again, I'm going to try to make contact with the one person I had to contact with originally and see once if we can work out a compromise. Next question.
Okay, this is a different question. The Chester County, Pennsylvania, COS, is inviting you to come and speak to their group either live or over Zoom. Would you be interested in doing that?
Yeah, I would do that over Zoom. You know, I don't want to travel too far. If there's a group close by, and you know, I'm in Dutchess County, and you know, someone within a couple of counties in any direction, I would travel to. But we you know, we did travel across the whole New York State, and we even went out into Connecticut, and even further than that in some places. We went out to Rhode Island. But that was years ago when we were putting things together. But right now I don't have the time to really do any traveling. So, but I would do it over Zoom, sure. That would be good.
Okay, I'll go ahead and get in contact with them and ask them what sort of dates. Any day of the week better for you, John?
Jan, can you hear me?
Yes.
I literally just got off the phone with the Chester County people. We were on a Zoom meeting from 7 o'clock. And so... we have our meetings usually on Monday night. I'm sorry, Wednesday night at 7 o'clock. But they're also looking into something in May for an event. And
is this West Chester County?
No, Chester County, Pennsylvania.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, it's so we were looking for something in May to have, unless you're available, like not next Wednesday, we have other people, but the following Wednesday is May 23rd. Wednesday, May 23rd is when, you know, you could suggest if you could do it then, a Zoom meeting.
Well, is it possible to do something on a Tuesday or a Thursday? One of the problems, because Wednesday, we have Bible study from 7:30.
Right. They have other committee meetings too on Tuesday and Thursday. Jan, reach out to Laura if she's the one who contacted you and try to set something up for May if you're able to. I don't know how busy you are.
Yeah, maybe if we have to, well, maybe we can work something out and move our study that particular week to a Tuesday instead of a Wednesday. And
well, we have a May 5th is our once a month. We all come together, all of Pennsylvania, and we have our meeting then. So if there's, you know, May 5th, if you're available, that's a Monday night.
And what time?
We usually meet at 7 o'clock on Monday.
And how long does it go for?
Usually just 2 hours.
Okay, so I could probably do that because then I'd be done in time for a Monday night program.
Okay. So, Jan, if you want to reach out to Laura and let her know, that would if that's the person who contacted you.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah,
let her know. I'll text her now and let her know, too.
All right, so
thank you, John.
May 5th potential, then.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Next question. I am involved in a civil case over a breach of partnership / constructive eviction. While we are waiting for the case to go to trial, the defendant has been stealing my personal property, not joint property, but the sheriff's department refuses to even make reports, let alone investigate. What would be a good process to use to get them to do their job?
Well, it sounds like a civil case, not necessarily, or is it a criminal case? They stole something?
Well, it sounds like while they're waiting for the case to go to trial, this person is just kind of helping himself to the things there.
Okay, so apparently there's a co-ownership, I guess, of things, and people are taking things, and I presume, I don't know. Well, look, it sounds like a civil case to begin with, but if it's a criminal case, you just go file a criminal complaint. They can't not hear that. I hate to use the word complaint, because complaint means that which proceeds according to civil law. And so it would be a criminal action. Not that that would mean anything to those people, because they wouldn't understand the difference. But again, if it's a criminal act, the sheriff would have to do it. And unfortunately, if he wouldn't do it, then you can go to the local police for that, to file a criminal complaint. Other than that, I'd call it a criminal action. Other than that, a civil action would be proper.
Okay. The next one is fairly long, John. My name is Ivan. In accordance with the principles of our republic, I have been fighting against the presumption that our offspring are wards of the state, more correctly called the government, and that their rogue government actors hold parens patriae and supreme guardianship over them. I'll let this case speak for them. The theory upon which the court proceeds in such cases is that the custody and control of the parent over his minor children is a trust committed to him by the state, and this trust is dominated by the supreme guardianship of the state as parens patriae of all infants within its border. And when the parent abuses the trust so as to endanger the welfare of the child in such sort as to hamper or retard its development into a good citizen, the interest of society requires the state to assert its supreme guardianship and protect its ward. And that's under Ex Parte ERG number 1090883. As anything with an inkling of education regarding these topics should observe, labeling our offspring as their wards from the beginning are words that have sparked bloody revolutions. I employ paper and pencil, as the republic is a great system. The corruption and abuse of power is the constructive despotism. This is the main focus of my fight. However, the constant persecution of the people in violation of the supreme law in general is also part and parcel. I am looking for support and to share my work with others who may benefit from same. I've linked an example as an attachment which outlines the principles which I am proceeding. And I didn't see any attachment. So apparently it doesn't come to a question.
Well, let me respond a little bit. What state was that person from?
Doesn't say.
Okay, because I've never heard of anything like that being written down anywhere. That would be unbelievable. They did give some kind of a code, or some statute or something. I know you started to read something off.
It looks like it might be Alabama. Ex Parte ERG number 1090883, 49-50, Alabama, June 10, 2011.
Okay, that sounds like some kind of a decision in a court. Maybe you can, when you get a chance, just type that into Skype and... And I'll take a look at that, and I'll go look that up, because, again, that sounds like some kind of a decision somewhere. But I'm interested in looking into that. That's very strange that they would put something like that in writing. I know they act as if they own our children, as if, but we know that God gave us our children. And that whole system is really defunct. We're looking to shut down the family court system because it just doesn't work, and it's abusive. It doesn't do anything to help anyone. The children don't nobody benefits from it. Even if there is a need to take the children away, they just don't have a way to properly deal with it. And so we have to look at this from a different perspective. I've got some ideas, and I think it needs to be thought about. But the bottom line is people need to get to due process. And people that have problems, really need clinicians and people to discuss the problems and work things out with them. They could be forced into that kind of a situation if it really needs to be done that way. But But again, one of the problems also is there's a lot of money in stealing children. This whole thing is all about money. Everything in the court seems to be all about money. But before we can do anything to try to repair that problem, we first have to get the original federal courts back. And without getting the federal courts back, we're not going to get any courts back. But we'll talk some more about that in a short while. Okay, next, Jim.
That's all the questions, John.
Oh, okay. All right, are there any other announcements?
Not that I have.
Okay. All right, about a week ago or so, I think it was last week, Jan gave me a call. Jan and Terry were talking about some ideas of maybe doing something by filing something with the Supreme Court and going after really the Rules Enabling Act, which is what they use in order to get rid of or to, get rid of the, common law, no more common law courts. So, and I thought about that, and I was thinking about that anyway, but I was thinking about doing a lot more than that. But I think the idea of just dealing with one problem at a time, because first we have to get a courts of justice back, and if we can get common law courts back, and of course we'd have to define that very clearly in our paperwork, so that's something that we definitely, I think we should be doing. I've been thinking about how we would approach this. At first I thought, maybe we can go right in with filing for a writ certiorari. I'm not sure how to pronounce that. Certiorari. Anyway, and that is really where you're requesting the paperwork that the Supreme Court would then hear your case and request the paperwork and all the information from the lower court. I don't know that there's any way to go through this without first going through the lower courts first, going through the federal courts. And so we'd have to probably file it in the federal court, work it up to, the appeal. Neither of them are going to even really hear the case because they're not capable of hearing the case. But the target really is the Supreme Court. I do believe if we have serious people there in the Supreme Court that really are interested in repairing our republic and getting back to law and order, this is a case they cannot refuse. They just can't do it. Now, we've already sent an indictment. First of all, we did a presentment concerning the problems with the federal courts, and then we ended up with doing an indictment. And we copied, of course, Bondi, Attorney General Bondi, with it. So he's got a copy of that, and also the president. There's a lot of things going on. Because we haven't heard anything doesn't mean nothing has taken place with that. But the other side of things, there is a lot of talk by this administration concerning all of the corruption in the federal courts. And I know they're looking to get rid of a lot of different judges. I heard 150, but I don't know how true that is. But they're looking for that. I know they're looking to replace a lot of the prosecutors. I think they all have to go, all 94 of them. There's one prosecutor for each federal district. And of course, they order, they hire other individuals, assistant attorney generals to assist them. Not attorney generals, but assistant prosecutors. And, the whole house has to be cleaned out. It's a den of thieves. They're all guilty. You can't get rid of some and not all of them because every single one of them is guilty of subversion, whether they realize it or not. I mean, they are useful idiots. They were taught by bar schools, and they didn't have a proper education in the first place. None of us really have, K through 12, when they went to school, they didn't have anything really to prepare them for understanding what they might be pursuing, in this case, of course, the law. And when they went into bar school, spent their $200,000 or whatever, they were taught civil law. They were taught they were under Roman law. They were taught that they actually have the power to actually judge people and send people to jail, as far as the judges are concerned. And under common law, only the people can send someone to jail. No judge can do that. No judge can really give any kind of a term you know, a year in jail or whatever the case may be. That's up to the people and the people alone. And that's what we have to return to. So it's a real serious problem, and I think it's a good idea, what Jan and Terry brought up to me, is to focus in and go in really to get back, to get rid of the rules of the court, federal rules of procedure. And the rules of federal procedure, I think, let's see, federal rules. Well, I'm not sure. Anyway, it's the rules of federal procedures. And we have to get rid of them. Now, there's a lot in the Constitution that, you know, it makes it repugnant. I mean, the Seventh Amendment alone, which talks about the right of a common law court and the right of anything to be heard, has to be heard under the rules of the common law. And so I think we can write a really good paper on this, but it's going to take money to do this. And so we're asking anybody who's interested in helping us to bring our courts back to courts of justice so we can file papers up again up with the United States Supreme Court. That would be our target. I would think it would probably take a couple of months to be able to get the writ where the order would come down to bring the case into the Supreme Court. And again, I don't know that there would be... From the research that I've done, the United States Supreme Court, there's about 5,000 requests to be heard. Different. Someone's got an open mic. So.
You're not in Q&A, John.
What's that?
You're not in
Q&A
yet.
Well, let me open up for Q&A. Hold on a minute. Yeah, if anybody wants to get into the queue, *601. And if you're on a phone, and there should be a button if you're on an app or a browser.
John?
Go ahead.
I found a listing for that court case from the last question. It's an Alabama Supreme Court case from 2010. I put the link in your Skype bin, okay?
Okay. Yeah, I'll take a look at that. That's kind of strange. Okay, anyway... So anyway, we need to really do something with the Supreme Court, and I don't think, as I was saying, they get about 5,000, and I think up to 7,000 sometimes, so anywhere between 5,000 to 7,000 requests for cases a year, and they only listen to about 150 of them, And the requirement is that when they, I guess what their clerks probably go through at first, and they throw up the possible candidates to the Supreme Court. And then, of course, the justices might review them, and then they would vote on that. And it would require, I believe it was four justices, to agree to hear the case. I can't see that they could possibly have a case much stronger than a case concerning... the fact that they have abrogated the common law. I mean, the main focus is we the people ordained and established. They don't have the authority to ordain and establish nothing, anything. They don't have the authority to delete what we the people ordained and established, to abrogate it. And if there is no court of justice, if there is no common law courts of justice in America, then, of course, there is no justice at all. We will never win cases. And these people will continue to rule over us as tyrants. Now, I know a lot of changes are being made, and I think the administration is on the same focus to get rid of these people, but who are they going to replace them with? They're going to replace them with more bar attorneys? It's not going to fix the problem. So I think it's a good idea. And again, we're also trying to educate everyone in Trump's administration. And I spoke about this the last couple of weeks, where we haven't really had any response at all to this. And it requires money. We need to send about 40 books out of government by consent to each all of these individuals that is within Trump's administration and some senators and some congressmen that we know are our friends, because they need to be educated. They do not know who we really are as a people. I don't think they believe that we're a Christian nation. I don't think they understand that we are under common law, and the common law is ultimate the law of God, and the Bible is a book, of course, that gives us a lot of information on common law and how we should proceed. But nevertheless, they don't see or understand that we are a republic. They keep talking about a democracy. I've heard some of them call us a democratic republic. That's an oxymoron. That doesn't work. Our founding fathers were clear about that. I believe it was Federalist number 10 that talks quite a bit about this problem with democracy. But there are a lot of quotes from our founding fathers, and none of them, they were all in one accord. They wanted nothing to do with democracy. That democracy is only really, it destroys themselves in the end. It commits suicide. And really, a democracy really is the first order of business to bring in an oligarchy. And that's what's been going on around the world for quite some time now, since World War I, really. I think is when a lot of it started, but definitely by World War II, or in between the two wars, is really the big focus of nation building and bringing in building democracies. And the United States has been involved with that for quite some time. And I believe there's about 200 democracies that have been constructed over the years. But again, that is just a setup to bring in an oligarchy. An oligarchy is really a group of people behind the scenes controlling an individual who, in our case, would be a president. And this is what's been happening in America. Kennedy tried to do something about that. I think Reagan tried to do something about that also. And Trump is the third one, at least in my lifetime. Eisenhower really exposed a lot of it, especially when he left office. He was very concerned about the problems that he saw here in America with the military-industrial complex. And he saw the problems with that, and of course Kennedy did too. But they weren't capable of really dealing with the problem. And Trump is dealing with this problem. So, but the problem is that bar attorneys believe that we are under Roman law. Bar attorneys are taught that we are a nation fashioned under the Roman Empire. Okay, and nothing could be further from the truth. We are not fashioned under that. We're not under their law. Roman law is Justinian law, which brings us right to Babylonian law. Babylonian law, Justinian law was rewritten, Babylonian law, to give it another name, and it was eventually adopted in Rome and developed into, they called it actually Roman law. Now there is some conflict from talking with lawyers over the years, from their perspectives. I think earlier on they taught them one thing, and then more recent times, they taught them another thing. So there seems to be a conflict in their thinking about the law. But they all agree on the idea that we are under Roman law, we're under civil law. I don't know that any of these lawyers have any clue about the Rules Enabling Act. None of these lawyers have any background in the Constitution. They don't know our history. They don't know who we are as a people. And so they are totally ignorant to these things. I mean, you look at all the people that are backing up the things that these crazy Democrats are doing. And again, it's not all Democrats, it's the leadership. But what these crazy Democrats are doing, you got a lot of true believers. They really believe in what they're claiming. I think a lot of them are paid, you know. They're just paid people to go out and, you know, protest or whatever the case may be. But nevertheless, there's a percentage of people that are true believers in this. And, ignorance is a problem. As Jefferson said, if people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never going to be. You know, if the people don't know how to have a republic, then it's up to the government to teach them that. The schools are to teach them that. And, you know, we need to push Congress at some point in time a requirement that the Constitution and civil civics and good American history, real American history, need to be taught in the school. I mean, there are a few of us prepared to write books on these things from K through 12, and I'm sure we can find a couple other people who are educated in this area that we can find to help us. But again, with that, we don't have the money to do that. You know, so we are searching out money. Anybody has any ideas on how we can achieve money to achieve our goals, that'd be good. Or anybody knows how to ask corporate companies or corporations or different groups of people for money. Again, I have no experience in that, and nobody within our group, to my knowledge, has any experience with that. But if anybody does have experience and knowledge of that, and how we would approach, how we'd write our letters, and maybe where we'd find a list of different people who would be willing to put funding out. They, you know, people put a lot of people who've got a lot of money, they put a lot of money into a lot of different things. Of course, if they're on the other side of things, they'll put their money into things that's really going to really destroy us more. But anyway, that's the big problem. But right now, there are things we can do. We can all get educated. We keep pushing for that. People need to be get educated and to step up. You know, we do have people supporting us, thankfully. You know, it keeps us going, keeps the lights on. But a lot of the projects we want to do, we just don't have the money for it. But this project, I think, is an important one. So anybody who thinks they would like to support this project, you know, and can find a few dollars to really give to us for that purpose, if we can get enough money up together, I'll start working on this immediately. I've been thinking about it since last week. Got a lot of ideas on how I might approach this. I'm thinking on what perspective to approach it from. I don't think we can approach this doing a lawsuit to open up our courts of records back again from the perspective of the grand jury. The grand jury has done what it can. Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury has done what it can in order to put enough information out there to prove conspiracy. To do enough cases to prove conspiracy and to lay out in the courts the problems with our courts and you know, so and also we did presentments concerning these things. We put the United States Supreme Court on notice. Then we did a presentment to them. We did a presentment to Trump and Bondi, and you know, we copied Bondi a little later because she came in a little later from when we did that. But then we did the indictment that every single one of these people, they got to go. We can't have anyone left. They all have to go. And we have to, these people, if they want to come in and practice law in our courts, they need to leave the bar. And according to the 13th Amendment, they can't practice law in our courts if they belong to the bar. Capital B-A-R, British Accredited Registry. And now a lot of people get confused, you know. Lincoln was a bar attorney, they claim. Jefferson and Madison and many of the founding fathers were lawyers and they took the bar. But you have to understand, the bar originally, the idea of the bar is a separation. It's a gate that separates. Now, people have added a lot of things and thoughts and ideas to this idea, but the bottom line, it's a place that separates the people that are there to listen in and those that are on the other side of the bar. The jury would be on the other side of the bar. But the basic idea, though, is to pass the bar means that your peers, who are lawyers, and this is what happened with Jefferson and all of our founding fathers, and Lincoln, no difference, okay, where they had to go or pass the bar test by being tested by their peers, other people who are lawyers, asking them questions to see if they qualify from their perspective to be a lawyer and to practice in their courts. And people can go back, I'm sure, if they don't pass it, you know, like any other thing. But the bottom line, that's appropriate, okay? Nevertheless, in common law, anyone can practice law. Anybody can go in and defend themselves or defend others. That's the choice of the people that are in the courts that are bringing cases, maybe civil law cases, into the court. And so now the other side of the coin, of course, is the bar, the British Accredited Registry, which has been around for quite some time, even before 1750. I know 1750 is when they entered into the colonies, and they've been here ever since, changing and turning our common law courts into, chancery courts. And so anyway, coming from this, from the perspective, as I get back to what I was talking about, from the grand jury, I don't think would be appropriate. I don't know how we could do that. I was looking on the internet to see if there ever was a case where a lawsuit was brought by a grand jury, and I've seen nothing anywhere. And it just doesn't sound like that would be the appropriate thing, you know? The other thing is coming from the perspective of National Liberty Alliance. I don't think that's appropriate. I'm not sure. I've been thinking about that, but that's a possibility. I may have to do it personally. And maybe there'll be a few people who want to put the names on it. I don't know. That can assist us in some way or another. But that I got to think out. But one way or another, we could do something to make a plan in order to figure out how to approach this. But as far as writing the case, I already got so many ideas. I think I can write a very, very powerful paper and try to stay on point, just working to get back our common law courts. Now, if we don't get common law courts back in our federal courts, we will never get our courts back in the state courts, because we have to have the federal courts to require them to be obedient to the Constitution, because we can take our appeals to them. Anything that is a violation of the Constitution, and any state court that violates our due process rights or any other thing, you know, the fact that they reject us to open up the doors to the courts of justice. So in order to force that to happen, we have to have the federal courts behind us with enforcement, okay? So that's why the target has got to be the federal court. And that's why the target has got to be the United States Supreme Court. And again, I fear that when all things are said and done, and let's say they get rid of most of the judges, hopefully all, but most of the judges, and replace them, we got to be careful they don't replace them with bar attorneys. And that's their plan. And those people that are in Congress right now, that some of them are good people, and some of them in Senate, that's good people, and even some people around Trump and his administration, good people, and they're lawyers, but they don't see common law at all. They were never taught it. They have to relearn, and it's hard for people to relearn when they think they know something. It's not what you think you know. No, it's not what you. Well, I forget how that goes. But the bottom line was, the real danger is what you think you know that isn't so. Okay. Now, that's the problem we have to deal with. So we have to educate the individuals that are in this administration, and as much as possible on the one hand, and we have to write a very powerful paper to the United States Supreme Court to demand our courts of justice to be opened up again. And we have to write it in a very forceful and authoritative way. And I'm prepared to do that if we can get the financial support to cover the cost. If we do get a hearing into the Supreme Court, once you get your papers through, they want to hear it live, orally, and I would have to, I guess, travel to Washington. I'm not sure how that would work. There are the district courts that are run. You know, each one of these justices have different areas that they cover. But I don't know whether a case could be heard here in New York, or if I'd have to go to Washington for that to be heard in an argument for the case. So anyway, there's a lot of things I have to look into, but we can put things together rather quickly. I think within a week or two, we can probably get everything, all the papers written up and ready to serve and get into the courts and start from the low end and work up. But again, I get back to money. And to do it without educating the other people that need to be educated, that's going to hopefully replace a lot of these judges, which would be the Senate particularly, but it would be also the president involved with this, because the president is the one that sends up before the Senate, but the Senate has to approve these individuals. So we have to educate these people. And that happens with sending them a book. I've been communicating with these people for quite some time. A couple of times we've had communications with all of them, and we've sent some books to a few of them. But we really need to educate them at the highest level we can. So, if the people want courts of justice, we need financial assistance. So, if you want courts of justice, send us some donation, and when you put your donation in, make a note on it that it's for opening courts of justice. And I'll be putting out an email. It'll be a short email because, unfortunately, people are being taught not to read very much. People don't seem to read books anymore. And that's going to be more destruction in our society if we don't really start to really educate ourselves and become thinkers again and not depend on AI. I know people depending on AI, you just, at some point, especially if your children growing up, we're just going to be a society of morons. We're going to depend on AI for everything. I mean, people can't even read a map. Some people don't even know where the United States of America is. And we're talking about college students that don't even know where the United States of America is on a map. They don't know who the first president is. This is all by design, by the way. You know, it's not that these people are stupid. The problem is they haven't been educated in these things. They haven't read books on these things. They haven't been exposed to these things. They haven't had civics course. They don't know the Constitution. They haven't read the Constitution. They don't know who we are as a people. They don't understand the difference between a democracy and a republic. They're totally ignorant to all these things. And again, that doesn't make them stupid. It just makes that there was a really good plan to destroy America out there. You know, we have children in school that coming out knowing nothing. Nonsense is what they've been teaching. But I guess the bottom line, I guess that's about it. If people want courts of justice, help us and support us financially. If we don't get the financial support, then, you know, I'll see what I can do as time goes on. You know, I've been pretty much, you know, things are difficult for everybody. I know everybody's struggling, you know, but things are going to get better. But economically speaking, I know I'm struggling to survive every month. My monies that come in from my books, they go right into National Liberty Alliance, and anything left over I use to pay my bills with. But it's a struggle for me as much as anyone else. All right, I guess that's it. We'll go and start taking our questions. Now, the queue is open. Let me see if anybody's in the queue yet. Star 6 and a 1 if you're on a phone. We only got one person in the queue. If you're on an app or a browser, should be a button. So we'll take our first and only person in the queue right now. Oh, before we do that, there is another thing. I was thinking about this for a while, and I wrote another book. Let me see. I'll just open up where it's at. It's under Welcome. Click on Books by John Darash. But a book I just published was Understanding the Federal Courts. Okay? So I wrote this book. I don't remember. And the $29.95 might be the price on this. I don't remember. I think I might have lowered that. But I don't remember. But anyway, there's a lot of books here. Also, I also put up another Common Law Handbook. Now, I had written a common law handbook for sheriffs for judges, sheriffs, and all the court offices. And that book was stolen by someone, and they published it, and I haven't been able to deal with that problem. But anyway, I wrote another book called Common Law Handbook. It's far superior to that. It's for anybody, really, but it's good for sheriffs also. But we do have a book, County Sheriff's Common Law Handbooks, anyway. But this is for the common person and for anybody that's in the courts also. And I forget how many pages it is. Let me see. It's quite a few pages. It is a handbook. It's 227 pages. On the front page I wrote, the natural liberty of man is to be free from any superior power on earth and not to be under the will or legislative authority of man, but only to have the laws of nature for his rule. And on the back of the handbook it reads, Esquires are taught and convinced that we are under Roman law and a democracy fashioned under Rome through outcome-based education. Thereby having no prior proper K through 12 education, they also, through an outcome-based law education, receive the lie and are transformed unwittingly into the minions of the New World Order. They truly are the minions of the New World Order, whether they know it or not. Their purpose, and they've been taught for their purpose, is to destroy common law, and they've done a very good job at it. They don't even understand what common law was or is. Okay, anyway, lie and transformed unwittingly to the minions of the New World Order, and thereby covertly changing our republic and the minds of the people to a democracy, and our courts from common law courts to chancery courts. Their belief in what they've been taught is so strongly embedded into their minds that they are blinded to the truth. The truth being, we are a common law constitutional republic fashioned under Israel and the Bible. Maybe three times more pages than what was the original thing, which I wrote for, again, for court officers and sheriffs. But since I had already written a book for sheriffs, I figured I'd just write a book for everybody, really. And all these books are for everybody anyway. They're all knowledgeable books. It brings you knowledge, and knowledge is power. So anyway, that's available, and again, I know a lot of people have talked about going into the federal courts, and if you don't understand how the federal courts are set up, you have to understand how the system works and how the courts are structured. It's nothing complex, but anyway, there it is. Okay, with that, we're going to take our first caller, and anybody else wants to get into the queue, star 6 and 1 if you're on a phone, and give you a button if you're on an app or a browser. So, Patrick, is the first person. You got the mic, and did that register? I think it registered. Hang on. Let's try clicking this. Patrick, you got the mic. Okay,
there we go. There we go. Hi.
Yeah, give us your
John?
Yep. Give us your state.
Okay. So I've been following you guys.
What state do you live in?
I'm sorry, what?
What state do you live in?
Oh, Washington.
Okay. Patrick from Washington. Yeah. Right ahead.
Yeah. In fact, on that note, I was looking at the safety committees or committees of safety for the area, and I don't see any. It'd be nice to have some. I was wanting to go and take some of the information to the county sheriff and having a safety committee would probably be the better way to do it than just going in solo.
Well, definitely, anyway. You want to go in as a group, definitely. Starting a committee of safety is the way to do it. Creating a charter and resolutions, it tells the sheriff exactly who you are, what you're doing, and that you have every intent of being around and bringing us back into under the law again. And the sheriff should appreciate that unless he's a criminal. Even a person that's ignorant of the law and is enforcing statutes and, you know, civil law and stuff, because of ignorance, if we educate them, it'll be hopefully an epiphany for them and a change of mind, change of focus, and of course, we'll have more law and order in our counties. But yeah, county safety is the way to go.
It'd be nice to do that because right now I'm currently taking a prosecuting attorney and one of the local officers to the court or to. You know, I'd file a conditional acceptance letter is the way that I'm going about it. But anyway, this is probably one of the most corrupt counties and towns that I've ever been in. So it'd be nice to know that the sheriff had my back, but I don't count on it. But anyway, so there's a Telegram group that I participate and join in a lot. And I joined in on one of the administrators. He had a meeting on his own channel. And what they're doing is, I could see right off that they're doing the same thing that National Liberty Alliance is doing. They're setting up committees, committees of safety, and a lot of stuff. I mean, I support both of you guys because basically you're both doing the same thing.
Which is that? What's the name?
What's that?
What is the name of the group?
They're called the Republic for the United States of America. I could give you, I could do a screen share of some of the documents that
Republic
I got.
The United States, for the United States of America, that's what it is, Republic for?
Yeah, it's, let's see, the Republic for the United States of America is what's on top of this document. And then,
is there a web link in there somewhere? Is that what it actually says, Republic for the United States of America?
For the United States of America, the Republic. Apparently what they're doing is that they're trying to take over, they're trying to reinstate the de jure government and get the Joint Chiefs of Staff to sign on to get rid of the de facto.
That's
re-inhibiting. So what I said to him, I said, Stacy, have you talked to the guys over at National Liberty Alliance? Because they're doing the same thing. And it just seems to me that if you're doing the same thing, that joining forces would be the thing to do, you know. And what he said to me is that he would love to talk to somebody. If I know anybody at National Liberty Alliance, he would like to be in contact with them. Now, I get your emails all the time, and I join in from time to time on the calls, and you guys do great work. I don't know if I have any contacts because of that, but I just wanted to pass a message that Stacy would like to talk to somebody.
Yeah, well, we'll talk to them. Terry or Jan, have we spoke to these people before?
The splinter group that we talked to a couple of weeks ago, or I thought it was last week. Maybe it was 2 weeks ago.
It was a couple of weeks ago.
They came out of this, and yeah, we have talked about this.
So this is the breakaway group from...
this is the main group.
Yeah, I think they're out of Alabama, according to this letterhead thing.
Okay. Yeah, I do have a contact individual from this group. We had a meeting, and again, you know, one of the problems we had is that they were doing something with the grand jury, and you know, they're not providing an education. They're looking at it from a different perspective, where they'd be a grand jury for years. I mean, that is just a wrongdoing. You can't do that. It's got to constantly be changed and refreshed. You know, you can't just put a group of people. We know there's California done that in a couple places, and there's also a lawyer who is the foreman of a grand jury down in Florida, and he's been, and this is a couple of years ago when we had contact with these people to some degree, and at that point in time they were already active a couple of years and still running as a grand jury, a bar attorney running a grand jury. Just think about that. And So, again, you know, we've done a lot of research in this, and we're trying to do it as proper as possible. And I think that's one of the problems we have, that they were doing something with that. And, you know, we would support them in what they're doing, re-inhabiting, you know, trying to take back all of the positions within the states. And they asked for education through us. You know, they're coming to us for an education. So I don't know, it looks like they don't have much of an education here because, you know, people can't do these things unless they're properly informed and they understand what they're doing. And they have to, you know, we strongly push. Yeah, go ahead.
No one group is going to come in 100% on the money, you know, not have some sort of...
I agree 100% with that.
There's some sort of strength, you know, and so... If the two groups united, well, one of those groups is going to more than double in their strength, and the other group's going to get a nice fat big boost too. You know, I mean, just to take the strengths of each group and combine them, and then work out, you know.
Well, that's what we need to do is try to see if we can, you know, change some minds and focuses on some of the things where they have error. You know, look, I'm sure we have error too. Don't get me wrong. None of us is perfect. But we're willing to listen to people who would show us that error and make that correction. And believe me, that has happened over the years. And we work with groups. Look at Robert Schultz his group he's got going, which is We the People. And he's been around for quite some time. And he's done a lot of great work. They're doing something a little different, but it doesn't injure what we're doing. If people want to do what he's doing, that's fine, and we're willing to support him as much as he's willing to support us, and people could decide where they want to put their energy and what he's doing and what we're doing. And of course, we work together on that. Now, I'd be willing to work with any other group the same way. And again, I have some thoughts and ideas that might help them a little better on the perspective of the political thing that they're trying to do, to re-inhabit, okay? I'd be willing to, I'd work with them on that. Not on a federal level, but on a state level. And I guess this is the group that's working on the state level. The problem is that they are doing something with the grand juries that's a wrongdoing. We can't do a wrongdoing. You can't be teaching more people one thing and then they're learning another thing and it's conflicting. Okay, so maybe we can get a conversation with them where they let us handle that part of it. They're interested in taking our education. And our education is going to teach them exactly what I'm talking about right now. They'll see the conflict of what they're doing. So,
would you like me to leave his name and number with you, and then you guys can reach out to him if you want?
You want to give it to me live, or you want to mail it, email it?
Yeah, his name is Stacy Pierce. P-I-E-R-C-E.
Okay, what's his position? What was the name of the guy that we spoke with, Terry, do you remember?
I'm not sure of his position. He's up there. I guess he's in the meetings and stuff. So.
Okay. Yeah, the guy that we spoke with is supposed to be one of the main leadership of the group, and so he makes a lot of decisions, but
he's in California.
In the position of governor in California. But do you remember his name? That guy's name, Terry?
I got it written down somewhere. I'll look real quick.
Okay. All right, what's this guy's phone number? I'll give him a call.
It's area code 515-979-1934.
934. And what state? Do you know what state he's in?
Are you asking me what state I'm in?
No, no, what state this guy, Stacy,
is? He's in Iowa.
Iowa?
Yep. Okay. Yeah, he goes by the Iowa Patriot.
Okay. All right, yeah, that's not the same guy we spoke to. Yeah, I'll talk with him. And, because I was interested in working with the people, but again, we have to accept correction when we find an error and just move on, and sometimes people just put a lot of investment in something, and I understand that, and there's a lot of changes maybe need to be done sometimes, and major foundational changes, and that could be very difficult to do, but again, if they let us handle the one side of things, which is our expertise, and they want to handle the other side, and we'll teach them the political process in a way that I'm sure we got a lot of knowledge on how the political process works and the structure that might be very helpful to them, and also a better way of focusing in and doing what they're doing if they're willing to talk.
But what you've done, John, I mean, the stuff that you filed is just awesome, but as you know, it's just been ignored. The administrations have just basically flipped jaw, but now maybe we have an administration where something can happen, and maybe now it's the time to join forces and really push through and knock these bad guys out of the picture. That's what I'm looking at.
If they're willing to communicate and make some change, and again, if they talk right with us, we are willing to communicate and make changes. So, it doesn't make any sense to continue to build on a fake or false foundation. So,
right.
But again, the problem, the way it stands, is a major conflict. And anybody that's looking at that group and looking at this group, they're going to see the conflict and the inconsistency, and that could be a problem.
So, right. Anyway, everybody's got to be, in sync and, not any kind of conflict and stuff like that. I agree with that. Yeah, so anyway, I'm going to get off here and get to my dinner. But again, thanks for what you guys are doing. Appreciate it.
Okay, appreciate it.
Bye.
By the way, we only got one other person left in the queue, so if anybody wants to get into the queue, *601 if you're on the phone. And
I think his name was Doug, John.
Doug, yes, that's what it was. I remember that, Doug. Yeah, this is a different person. This one's from Iowa. So we can see what you know what we can do with that.
The other person was Deb.
Yeah, that I have her phone number. So she's the one that I've had conversations with and set the meeting up. So okay, so we'll take our next person. We're going to go to, it looks like, Richard from NB. What is that, North Dakota?
Yes, sir, it is. How you doing?
Good.
I don't want to ask. That's a standard thing to do. I got two questions. Do you need a lawyer to adopt foreign through marriage?
Do you need a lawyer to what?
To adopt. My wife had three kids and from the Philippines, and I wanted to look into adoption. I have a niece that did some adoption of a baby that was abandoned. And it's been like $10,000 to the doctor.
But yeah, they love their money. I never looked into. I'm sure you could do it yourself if you understood the process and you had some education in the area, and that's what people have to do then if they want to specialize in a certain area. You know, lawyers are absolutely necessary. That are taught in statutes, different codes and regulations and different things for things that are appropriate, you know, things that we've given the government power and authority to write the legislation for. But, you know, if we self-educate ourselves, and you can also work in that area too, under common law anyway. Of course, they're not going to let you get into their courts right now because they want to control everybody. And that starts with the minions of the New World Order education to begin with, you know. If you're ignorant to it, there's no other way to get around it other than to go through a lawyer. And it is a shame that they want to charge that kind of money for that. The only other way, of course, is to start digging down deep, educating yourself.
Where would I go to get educated? It is in New York.
Well, look at, just start researching on the line. You'll be led eventually by keyword. Almost everything I do, and I get a lot of information on the line. You know, you get to different places where you can get information. In your state, okay, I'm sure, let me think about this. It would be state law. And I just start looking like to start with adoption law in your state. Maybe start right there with that. Just keep playing around with words. You'll eventually fall into places where you can get the law that is on the books. And it's an appropriate law because it needs to be a structure for something like that. So learn yourself and do it yourself is if you really. You also have to understand how the court system works. So you'd have to take a law course. You know, we give a law course. You can find that under education starts here, and come down to court access in the common law course. Click on that, and you can read the information on this. And this is a law course. It's 90 hours. We give the first 3 hours as an introduction for people to get a taste of what the course, how the course, you know, goes along. But that's what you have to do. You got to learn the law, the structure, and you got to learn the, whatever statutory process to control that. And again, you know, there's lots of law out there. When you start to look into law in the states, you'll find all kinds of different categories and things. And some of it is not all, but a lot of the course is required and necessary.
The other one, when I took law classes in college 50 years ago, we had, looking back, and we had a common law instructor. And he was talking about reform and a lot of stuff was going on. What he was focusing on was tort law reform.
Can I, hang on a minute. Hold on a minute. Someone is typing out there and it's coming through, so maybe they can mute themselves while they're doing that.
Got it.
Yeah, start over again. I didn't really get that. You took a law course or something?
I was taking law classes in college, from a state college, not a university. And the instructor, professor, was a practicing common law lawyer. I mean, looking back, I didn't really understand what he was doing, but he was talking about the huge need for tort reform. And went into all that kind of stuff and about what, you know, it's just all it does is makes lawyers rich. And he was against it. He later became a judge, and I never did go back to him. Now I since find out that he passed away, but I always wanted to go back and say, okay, and all this stuff. And he was talking about a lot of these cases that are coming in, they're absolutely frivolous. And the judge's responsibility is what we've talked about. It's to get rid of all that garbage. Don't even take it. I mean, that's stupid nonsense. And he was very adamant about that. All these cases are taken and shouldn't be just cluttering up the courts with garbage. And so anyway, that was my reason for asking. So now, I took law class just to explore the possibility of being a lawyer. Once I went to that class, there ain't no way. I figured out in college that's nothing but a good old boys club. The entire judicial system, nothing but a good old boys club. Because he talked about judges who take things behind the door, and I'd come across different books that were read about the Star Chamber and all these things that were going on, how they do. But which leads me, did you see? I sent the video, just the screenshot of the address. It was on YouTube, and just a few days ago, about Tom Holman. He went into a federal court room, and he approached the judge and he confronted him on the corruption that he was doing, making rulings, and he had verifiable proof that all this stuff. Well, the typical judge is, oh, that's all nonsense, you know, that's all hearsay. He said, nope, I got it right here. Well, this is my court, and I said, well, this is the people's court. And I mean, it's an interesting documentary about how he got this judge, and then the FBI got involved, and they literally said, we're going to question you after this. At the end of the day, at 3 p.m., he took off, he disappeared, they found him, and it turns out that when the FBI people were doing some tracking, this is not just this judge, it's a complete syndicate that's doing all this stuff. And this judge was saying, you know, plea bargaining, he can give you names. Well, they found his laptop, it had everything on it, on a flash card. And so anyway, I was just saying, then the same day, there was a couple of days prior to that, supposedly Chief Justice John Roberts was confronted as well with all the corruption he's been doing. And he's a member of some British, my eyes call it some British good old boys club, where they get all these judges together and they plan what they're going to do and how they're going to do it. And I sent that to you. And I just sent it to National Liberty Alliance, mail dot whatever. And I just said, hey, listen to the first few minutes of this. Have you heard anything about that? I mean, it's just to the point where it's supposedly an independent agency. It's got nothing to do with the mass media. And they were just
it's just on YouTube or Rumble or what? Or is it
well, website? It was on YouTube where I caught it. And I think it was also on Rumble.
Yeah, well, I was just going YouTube, what keywords would I put into YouTube to find this?
Tom Holman.
Tom Holman?
Yes, Holman, H-O-L-M-A-N. He's the guy that's been given charge to track all these illegal immigrants and ship them back. And this same judge, and the judge's name will start with the B-O-A-R-G-E-S, I think it is.
B-E-R-G. Judge Boasberg, it looks like. Corrupt Judge Boasberg insults Tom Holman in court. Minutes later, he's in cuffs. It's 39 minutes long.
Yeah. And you don't even have to listen to all of it. You listen to the first few minutes and just go all the way to the last 10 or 15 of it.
So Tom Holman, he's working on the border here. Yep. So you're saying he's a lawyer and he understands the law and he's exposing all the fraud?
I'm not saying he's a lawyer. I'm just saying he had all kinds of evidence that this judge was doing some, making, you know,
yeah, this is the one that's going after Trump, yeah.
Yeah, and for money and stuff, because that same judge also ruled that they had to bring all these illegals back, which the judge has no authority. A guy by the name of Jason Lewis out of Minneapolis a number of years ago, he was on a talk show, he was a common law lawyer, and he was talking about these judges have no authority over the president to tell him what to do. All they're just supposed to do is just rule on whether it's constitutional or not. And they got this one thing, it had to do something about Texas that was going on down there, and they were going to do away with abortions. And this judge said, no, you can't do that. And I was traveling along those days. I got on the program, and I talked, and I said, hey, I just asked questions. I said, but what authority does a judge have to enforce any of their rulings? He said, none. Well, who would they have to do it? He said, the military, state or federal. They have to have the military. Well, who's in charge of the military on the federal level? The president. Oh, so a judge can make a ruling saying that's unconstitutional. But in order to enforce it, the president has to go along with it and say, yeah, that's okay. You know, the separation. What I did learn a lot about the separation of powers of the three branches.
Yeah, three different branches, exactly. You know, and the judicial system has no business sticking a nose into the, you know, the administrative business.
Yeah, they can't tell the judge that the president wants to do. And right. And but they do it. Ned Borsberg, he's a creep, you know. And but Homer kind of got onto him. He's on leave or whatever. And then right after that was another case where Justice Roberts approached, and he's resigned.
That well, he's connected. I saw a video on him being connected to all these different judges that are really causing a lot of this havoc. There's a connection. He's part of some kind of a group, and And back in Jefferson just would have ignored them and continued because he had problems with the judges, and he spoke about judges being a problem, and Trump knows, I'm sure, you know, they talked about just nullifying is the proper process here, but he played along and allowed it to be enough for people to see what's going on and took it through the courts and did it in a way that he didn't have to, okay? But he did it also in order to really let the people see what's going on. We have corrupt judges. These judges rule on things that they have no power or authority to do. Who was it, that guy with the Pawn Stars? What's his name? Rick something.
I know who you're talking about. Yeah.
He just got life in prison. And that was given, the judge made that decision. Who the heck does he think he is to make that decision? But they do this.
Well, they do.
They do this all day long. They don't have that power or authority. You know, that's up to the jury. That's up to the people. And
and then Tom Holman was approached with the question, why are you doing this? Is, you know, whatever. He goes, I'm not afraid of you.
Mm-hmm.
He said, most of the time the people don't do anything because they're afraid of the retribution and the getting back at people, and people disappear and die mysteriously. And Dave Champion has got a new one out there, too, why the IRS will never be ended. It's smart.
Never be what?
Why the IRS and why the Social Security system is never going to be fixed. Because of the computer system.
Yeah, but we do know that it's going to be fixed, and they're working on it now. Nothing's going to stop what's going on right now. They can throw everything they want. Doesn't matter. They're not going to stop it. Trump is going
to... I hope that's the case. Yeah. But anyway, Dave Champion had a really neat documentary about how to free yourself from the church. And he said,
to free yourself
from because they're afraid. They're feared. What you don't understand, you're afraid to deal anything about. If you don't understand it, you're going to be afraid to deal with it. And most people don't understand tax law. And he spent 30 years researching. The guy is a physiology professor. He's an outstanding teacher. And I've been around a lot of good teachers, but a lot of crappy teachers. But this guy is good. When you get done,
under common law, tax law has no application upon the people at all. Any tax that cannot be avoided is an unlawful tax. So you can't tax a person, person's work, their sweat. You can't tax their property. You can't, you know, no direct tax. And the Constitution is very clear.
Exactly.
No direct tax is lawful.
But what he does is he helps people understand what the Treasury rulings are. He's getting there's over 70,000 pages of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely nowhere, anywhere, in any ruling, any tax ruling, any Treasury Department ruling, where a U.S. citizen has to pay a tax on their income. And he said that it specifically says all the regulations, and they want to say, well, it's by association. He gets into what that's all about. And then he gets into some of these bogus rulings that they have. It's if you know the law, you can stop them dead in their tracks. And he
Hold on. What you just said, to some degree, may bear some truth, but people who may know that lore and don't understand how to write papers, don't understand, you know, how to approach this whole thing and to kind of put them into check, because you really have to do some really deep research, then you might have a chance. You know, I wouldn't want to give people false hopes thinking that they can just know a certain thing and go into the courts and defeat them, because they railroad you right down. You know, they said that the jury is all stacked. It's all things of facade. Tax courts are no courts at all. They're unlawful to begin with. You know, I've been in tax courts.
If anybody was going to get chased after and want to get rid of it, that would have been Dave Champion. And he'll tell you, he hasn't filed a tax return in 30 years. And here he sits. He's never spent a day in jail. He knows the law, and he knows how to present
the law. Very, very few people are able to do this. Very few people.
Listen. That's what he's trying to do, is to educate, just like NLA is trying to educate.
Right, I understand. I understand that. But, you know, just I'm trying to make a point here. My point is this: a little bit of education isn't enough. The education to understand that part of the process and the law, and you want to get a lot of Supreme Court rulings on that. There's plenty of them out there. You can dig down. You can go down the rabbit holes of their codes, and you can show that that's how I won my case. You know, I went down the rabbit hole of the codes, and, you know, there was a problem for them. And so you have to know those things, but you also have to know what you're dealing with. You have to know how the court process works, you know? And
well,
again,
he gives you the tools and the knowledge to do that. But anyway, okay. Right. So I would encourage you to get his book, because everything's in there. He's got, but I sent you another question I have under contract law. What I was taught in that law class, a contract means two parties to perform, true or false?
Yeah, it's got to be a meeting of the minds.
Okay. They both agree to it. Now, if one or either party breaches the terms or condition of any part of the contract, it nullifies the contract, true or false?
Totally done, true.
Okay. I'm still dealing with this thing, with that lease thing I was telling you about, fraud. She went on and put out a warrant for my arrest because I burglarized that apartment I was living in. Well, she had been breaching the contract. Now, here's the thing I want to get at. This is what I want to ask you. If someone breached their contract, and we're going to talk about the landlord, it was a property manager that did all this stuff. It was extortion. She just violated every term and condition in that lease. Then she goes and we decided to go to month to month because we didn't know when we were going to be able to close on this house, so we went month to month. And the lease specifically says, because I read that stuff, specifically says, if you go to month to month, then you got to pay the market rate that was at the beginning of the contract of that term that we started, which was a year previous. We did not renew the contract. We did not renew the lease. We went month to month. Now, in the case of a month to month, you still eat both parties, the landlord and the tenant, have to give a 60-day notice of vacating. We told her she wanted to collect money for past due, whatever.
Each state has different laws on that. In New York, it's 30 days. But
well, anyway, this lease says 60 days.
That's the agreement. Okay.
But here's the point. She gave us a notice. We had 30 days to get out. And then she sent me a bill for all the stuff that was wrong with the place. That was that way before we moved in. We lived there for 5 years.
Let
me finish my question so we don't have to take time to explain anything. She breached the lease. She didn't take care. She didn't do the maintenance. She had a broken water main, and she was billing up for the water. I've got proof of all this stuff. But now she sends me a bill for $10,000 to replace the carpet, to resod the yard, your painting, and replace flooring and everything. That was all stuff that was in need when we moved in. And she told the maintenance guy she was not going to fix those closet and doors that had holes punched in them. Now, here's the thing. Breach of promise, misrepresentation. Now, she sends I went back in and took some doorknobs, some door openers, took them back. And I found some keys. And had a door opener. So I thought, well, I don't know if she had a lock on the door. I don't know if the locks didn't.
Okay, listen, I had to mute you just for a second. I'm going to unmute you. Listen, we've already went through all this, so if you have a question in this, because I remember that you told us the story about the keys and going in and in the garage and that kind of stuff, but what's the question or or the final comment on that. You're unmuted again. Now,
have a warrant. Can I issue a warrant for her arrest for fraud, misinformation, blackmail, falsely accused accusations, for breach of her lease? The point being, does she have any authority to do that?
You think you could make a criminal complaint? You'd have to go talk to the sheriff to see if he would agree, and dig deeper to see once what he thinks. And that's the only way you can go about this at this point in time.
The sheriff didn't agree with that warrant for my arrest and burglary to begin with. That's why he called me. He didn't arrest me. He didn't issue the warrant. So I'm in a process of trying to figure out how to approach this thing.
Richard, we spoke about this before, but the answer to your question is the sheriff. And hopefully you have a sheriff that'll look at the case. And if he sees it, you may see or think you see something there that you can go after them criminally, and the sheriff will look at it. He's got to be able to bring the evidence into the court and get the indictment so that, there's got to be something in there for the prosecutors to prosecute. So the thing is I would think more on the lines of civil case. That's what I would do. But with that, I got to move because we've got 14 minutes. We've got two other people in the queue, and I want to get to both.
So would it be best to deal with that, with just that first warrant, and just get that thing thrown out or whatever, and then do something later? That was my follow-up question to that.
Well, yeah, if you can dispose of one problem and then deal with the other problem later, sure, okay. That's a good way to go. Okay. That's how I do things.
My main thing was that if somebody breaches a lease or a contract, and not just one breach, but many, do they have any clout to sue me for things that was their responsibility to begin with? To me, it looks like lawfare. She's just doing what everybody else does. You go after people and make their life miserable.
Yeah, again, there's a lot of things that you point, you bring it up, that a problem. And I remember from the past, some of the stuff you brought up is a problem. Uh-huh. So, you may have a case, but you have to build it. And remember, the other side's going to fight it tooth and nail. So, but with that, I got to move on, because otherwise...
Yep. Talk to you later. Thank you.
Bye. All right. Thank you. Okay, we'll take our next caller. John Cooksman, you got the mic. Go right ahead. Michigan.
That was kind of hard to listen to, but he's got problems. Hey, the judge you were talking about was in Boatsburg. I wasn't sure if that was, I saw a video, and I'm not sure if that was an actual case or whatever it was. He was talking a lot of facts, but it was like a computer-generated voice on the thing talking about what was said back and forth. There was no recordings of anything, so I'm not sure if that was a fake or if that was just something made up on a Boatsburg.
Yeah, I've been seeing a lot of different things that, you're going through, and I say, wow, is this... And you're thinking it's the real news, and it turns out to be a bunch of BS. I mean, there's a lot of problems with that these days.
Right. I saw something with the lady that's the presidential spokesperson, and supposedly she went to court, and it was the same kind of thing where I've seen two or three of those things. I'm not sure if those were just spam on Facebook or somebody put together or whatever like that, or if it's, YouTube. Or if that's real stuff, I don't know how much I would believe, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do have to be careful. I mean, even in my research, I get to a lot of places, and I know a lot of this is BS. Especially these things written by lawyers about common law, for instance, or history. I mean, it's just unbelievable, And so you have to look at a lot of different, resources and then look for the truth. Truth is self-evident. It takes a while sometimes to see it, but sometimes you can see it very quickly. And again, the more knowledge you have, the quicker you're able to see the best from the truth. So, But yeah, there's a lot of stuff out there that's problematic. I know they put a link on Rumble, I think it is. I'm trying to think if YouTube did the same thing. I don't think they did. For instance, they ask questions concerning is this something that is, something that was created by AI or if it is actually something that you're reporting as truth. I mean, because I guess the problem has gotten so bad. So people who are putting things up there that aren't true, that would be a violation of their agreement, at least with Rumble. I don't know about YouTube. Fabricating a story is what I'm talking about.
Right, you still must be true. It sounds like it's very true and very, very believable, but I don't know if it is. That's what I'm saying. There's a claim that Holman did this, and the Boatsburg lawyer or the judge did this, and he backed off on the thing and ran and came back. I don't know. It just sounds too made up to me. I don't. If you Google it, say that Bloomsburg judge, whatever I get, it brings up something that some guy died, 35, 40 years ago with the same name. So I have no idea what it is. I just be careful with that.
Yeah, no, I'm going to listen to it. It's only 39 minutes. I'll find time to listen to it. But yeah, it doesn't make sense that Tom Holman is in court dealing with this judge. He'd be dealing with governors, putting them in jail, or anybody that gets in his way. I mean, that's what he's going to do. But to go in after a judge, Trump's already got, and his lawyers already got a handle on that. So, but maybe it's just commentary. I don't know what it's about yet. So.
All right, well, no big deal. Just check it out. I'm just don't take it at face value. So I'm sure you're smart enough to do that. So
I try to be very, very careful. I mean, still have error from time to time, I'm sure, but sometimes we fix it and sometimes we don't see it yet.
Yeah. Well, I thought I made a mistake once, but I was wrong. So
okay.
So I just wanted to caution you on that. So
all right, thanks a lot, John. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, we'll take our last caller here now. Thomas, not sure what state you're from. You got the mic, Thomas.
Hi, calling from Georgia. Just want to say thanks for all this information you're sharing. I have at least two questions here. Well, the first thing I want to know is there a difference, and I don't know if this is also is maybe a little different from what you discussed tonight, but is there a difference in filing for correcting your status as a, I guess, private American versus sovereign? I hear people talk about both, but I just wondered if you have any information on that or that could be helpful.
Well, you don't have to correct your status. That is something that people kind of put together to try. And there are courts that make certain decisions and say you don't have... I forget the word that they use, but maybe it's something like status, but it's not that. That's not the word. We the people ordained and established the Constitution. That's it. We're the sovereign. The law is clear. The United States Supreme Court in many, many decisions is clear that we are the sovereign. The people that are elected and appointed, they are not sovereign. They have authority. They don't have rights. Nobody has a right that you don't. What rights you have, unalienable rights they have, just as you do, but they have more rights than you. Therefore, they're not rights, they're authority. So we vested them with certain authorities, and that's the language of the Constitution, particularly with the court system, that they are vested. Okay? So there's a difference between the two. That's the point I'm trying to make. But as far as we are the sovereign, we are only kings ordain and establish. That's what we did. Our kingdom is, the life that we put together for ourselves, our family, and so on and so forth. But our kingdom ends where another person's kingdom begins.
Okay. All right. So, I hear a lot of people talk about that, and I was like, why do we need that? I didn't know.
A lot of people out there talking about the straw man and the different things with this, they're going up against this the wrong way. It's good to understand how they did what they did, how they turned us into chattel, how they incorporated the United States in 1871, how they took away our common law in 1938. And we understand that they look at us as being corporations, okay? And it's an interesting game that they play from the standpoint that they actually enlist you, but it's hidden. It's done covertly that you are a corporation. That's what the cap is all about. And we know all that, okay? We know all that. But to go in and argue and try to fight it from that perspective, very rarely, maybe people had success to that in the beginning, but a lot of people saying they have success in teaching that, I don't believe it at all. Not at all. And people end up getting themselves in trouble when they approach it that way. The common law is do it. The common law is so powerful, okay? We don't have to get into the fraud. We just have to lay out the law and the things that control judges, okay, depending on what it is you're doing in the courts. And one of the things, of course, is you don't want a judge ruling in your case, you want the people ruling in your case. I mean, if you have a just judge, maybe in a contract dispute, it could be easier maybe to go through a judge and allowing that process to go. You know, that would be your decision. But generally speaking, when you go and file a case and you're suing somebody for something, you really want a jury. And even if you're going up against the government, you're suing the government, you want a jury. The other problem with that, though, is they've stacked the juries, too. You see, they've taken total control of the courts. And the judges are not supposed to be judges of the people. They're only judges of codes and statutes, which control people who are either working in some commercial activity where there are regulations and laws and codes that they have to follow in the particular different businesses that they have. And on the one hand, and we've given Congress that power to do that, and then also anybody working for any kind of a government agency, they're under codes, so they're controlled by regulations, statutes. So, and all that is appropriate, but the people are not controlled by that. You know, we the people are we are the sovereigns. We're the lawmakers. We make the law. Okay, that's why it is the jury's job not only to decide innocent or guilt. They also get to decide not just the facts but the law. They also are the ones that make the penalty, what they think the penalty should be, with an eye on restitution. You see, restitution is more important than putting someone in jail. I mean, again, if it's a violent situation, some people belong in jail. But generally speaking, most people don't. And you can also incarcerate them in their own home and put a monitoring system on their leg. They can go out and work and earn the money that they have to bring together to pay restitution to the individual they've injured. You know, you go into court, sometimes they give them these big fines and stuff, and they give them a jail sentence on some criminal thing, and then they cast the victim out into the streets. They don't get anything. I mean, what the heck is that all about? If you're going to fine somebody money, it should be really a restitution focused on the victim. But again, it's not up to a judge to make those decisions when it comes to people. It's up to the people. So we're the sovereign.
Okay, and even with that signature that our parents put on our birth certificate, that we got our name in caps and, you know, on our social and all of that, we don't have to file for that. I know we don't have to, but we don't need to file for that status that you're telling me about mentioned earlier.
No, you're already a sovereign. You just lay out the case and come in with an attitude of being the sovereign in the court. That's
okay.
What you do. And,
right.
Look at... all this stuff is done in secret. There's no agreement there because there's no meeting of the minds. It's all code. It means nothing. Okay? It means nothing.
Wow. Okay.
So people need to go to jail because they're all playing part of the fraud. And a lot of them, the higher level, especially on the federal level, they know this stuff. Okay? They really understand more than we realize that they understand. They understand the whole system.
But
I wouldn't say all of them. You know, but most of them in the federal level. On the state level, I think they're really just dumb.
Okay. Well, a couple more. Do you offer coaching calls or consultations at all?
Well, just start here on open forums here that we have. I wouldn't say that I'm not practicing law because I do. But I don't take cases of people. I have taken a few cases with people that I know to help them, but generally I don't do that.
Yeah. Okay.
If you have a question and you understand how the court system works, and you can take the information, if you have some information that you can give me of a case, and I can give you some thoughts and ideas, and you can take that or leave it, or whatever you want to do with it. But you have to be able to take the information I give you and understand how to apply it and how it works. So you have to understand the court system. So okay. You want to learn that, we have a court course up here, right under Education Starts Here, Court Access in the Common Law. You click on that and read through the page and see if it interests you. It's a 90-hour course. We give the first 3 hours so that people can get a flavor of what we're teaching here, and we have a list of all the things we cover in the course.
That's the Common Law course?
This is court access and the common law. You know, had to open up. As a matter of fact, I just I won a case in the court and with against it was traffic court, and this guy just kept coming out after me, and he even got to the point where I had no choice but to pay the $300 fine that he put upon me, and this is all without due process, and I sued him for. Him and the prosecutor for denial of due process. I took it into the state court, and they actually defaulted. So I filed the papers. I'm going to put that entire case up from the beginning all the way to the end. When I have time, I'm going to put it up in the course, in the bottom of the course as, you know, as new information. So it's a nice court case so people can work off that structure. But I'll also put it for people who aren't in the course under Education Starts Here. If you come down to the law and then you come over to court forms and process, I will put it in here too. I mean, we do have details of, you know, how to write papers in a traffic court in here already. Okay. So, matter of fact, instruction forms for traffic court. So, basically, I'm going to update this here. On this page, and also put in for the default, and I have I'm waiting for, you know, I didn't want to involve a judge into this thing, but judge took hold of it, and you know they set up a hearing, which will give that opportunity for them to get back into the court, or maybe they're just trying to throw me out. I don't know. We're going to find out soon, but the bottom line is, you know, they get to write a paper. If they, you know, why they didn't respond or whatever the case may be. But it's a hard thing to be able to get past if you divorce, default on a case. Because in order to get back into the case, you have to show two things, okay? First thing you have to show is you have to have a darn good reason why you didn't respond, okay? And being lawyers, both of them are lawyers, so they should know better. But beyond that, why didn't at least one of them respond? You know, the point is why didn't they respond? So they have to have a good reason, usually like a death in the family or something. It's got to be something serious. That's number one. And there's a second thing they have to really achieve in order to get back into the case and open it up, and that is that they have to lay out a position showing there's a strong likelihood that they can win. Okay, so those are the two things they have to prove. And they set a hearing up for this, so we're going to see how that goes. It's probably going to be a month away at least. I just filed my papers and served the notice. They got so many days to get back to me, and then I get so many days to put a final paper in response to what they write, and then the hearing takes place. And it's going to be a hearing on paper only, and that makes me a little nervous that they're not actually having a real hearing, you know. That's fine, because I'll take it through the appeal system at that point. Because it's a slam dunk case. But, you know, for them, you know, I don't know what they're going to do.
Okay. Well, thanks. Okay. I had one more, if you have a moment. This would be brief, if it's okay. So do you have any information or where I could find information on process of how to discharge debt? And I've been hearing a lot of talk about, and I've been looking all over for this one, accessing our funds that are attached to the number on the back of our social.
If you want to go to jail, you can run down that process and try to get some money. You may get a nice big fat check, and then they'll break down your doors 30 days later, because that's what they do.
Wow.
So, dude, don't get involved in that stuff. Really. Look, I came in to trying to figure things out through that process, okay? But I saw too many contradictions as time was going on. And there are certain things they didn't understand. I'm wondering why they don't understand it, like the difference between law and equity. A lot of these people don't understand the difference between that. And I struggled
legally access it.
So I struggled for a while to understand what that was. And then when I came to it, I said, wow, this is so simple. I understand it now. And why didn't they understand it? Gerard and I used to go, he's a co-founder with me. We used to go to these, forums online. And these people claim to be lawyers, okay, but they're not bar lawyers, just self-appointed lawyers, and that's okay. But they had a lot of contradictions. And then, you know, they were doing the straw man stuff. And it's been my experience, people play with that. They come down harder on you. And if you want to go get your, I only know one person who went for this SQ account and started to apply monies off of that, and they got a nice fat check. And not even a month later, his doors were broken down in the middle of the night by the feds. And he actually, I happened not to be there. I had a few calls from him while he was on the run, on the road. And but they terrorized his family. And I don't know, I guess he's still on the run unless they got caught, unless they caught him and he's in jail. I don't know. But I wouldn't mess with that.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, thanks for all your help.
Okay. All right. Well, look at Procina. I see you're in the mic in the queue here. I'll give you a couple of minutes, and we got to close down. But go ahead, Procina.
Yeah. Hi. Yeah. Very quick. The sovereign citizen. I wasn't following it perfectly, but let me see if I'm summarizing it. I think you're saying that you don't believe it's necessary to go down that road of reversing, negating our corporate status, whether it be in a marriage license or birth certificate or, you know, social security.
It doesn't benefit. Yeah, trying to go down that road does not benefit the case, number one. You're going to only make an enemy of yourself out of the judge, number two. You're better off just, and it's much more powerful to go through the common law process, ignore the whole fraud business. At some point, you know, you can expose the fraud without telling them it's a fraud. In your paperwork, you can use U.S. Supreme Court rulings. There's a ton of them out there that are very powerful and strong. There's lots of even codes and different things, founding fathers, papers where they speak to each other, you know, communicating concerning the construction of our nation. And, you know, there's the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers. There's also biographies that are very helpful to give you understanding and knowledge. Look, at the common, there's so much in the common law. Just use the common law because it's much more powerful. And you're building a case also that can be won very easily. Once
and
we
have
get
you seen it won?
Huh?
Have you seen that successful?
No, I just said it. You're building a case that will be very successful on the other side of things. It's hard to get success in the courts. I had a success going up against the IRS, and they gave me an apology letter, and they also gave me a release of lien. So I happened to hit the right chords. There was 3 points that I really put out on that. We do cover that in the course. I used the law against them, and I used the common law.
Yeah, but other than your results, and you gave the result of knowing someone who was successful at getting his CUSIP funds and
right.
then getting run out of his home. So right. other than that evidence of it not working that way and your evidence of it working your way, do you have other cases that you can point to that were successful or failed in one of the other directions?
In what kind of a case? An IRS case?
Anything that usually an IRS case or something in terms of status, but anything that says I don't have to stand here in front of this court because I am, you know, I'm just using this again, I'm a sovereign citizen, therefore I don't come under your authority.
Yeah, look, Bill Thornton had a lot of success in his day. The constitutional man, I'm trying to think of his name, but he had a lot of successes in his day. The point is, it was in his day. We're talking 20 years ago. The last 20 years now, they have formed all kinds of strategies, and they put together a book. I don't know how long the book has been out, a book for judges concerning the sovereign citizen movement, you know. I have a copy of that. I should have one up online. I know I put it somewhere on our website.
So you're saying they've adjusted how they do things to combat the strategy.
They create strategies, and they become more bold. They don't care because they feel so protected that no one's going to get them. Look what the judges do to Trump. They think they're going to get away with it, but those judges are not going to get away with it. And I'm trying to convince Trump and Bundy of the same thing. This is happening to me. It's happening to everybody in the state courts. Everybody going into the courts, you're going up against the establishment, you don't get justice. You go up even against any of the status quo corporations, you don't get justice. You
lose. But that's my point. So you don't think that officially removing yourself in some official way.
But they laugh at that stuff. Most of them don't even understand what you're talking about, especially on the state level. Federal level, they may understand. State level, they haven't got a clue.
Okay, my last thing is I met someone a bit ago, and he said for himself and his divorce in, like, Ohio or somewhere, some years back, when he took a position of, like, constitutionally, blah, 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 whatever, covenant, blah, 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 whatever it was, and the judge said to him directly, don't talk to me about the Constitution in this court, and shut it down.
Probably in an administrative court. What court was he in? It definitely was administrative courts. It was chancery. All courts are chancery these days anyway. But what kind of a court was it? Was it a federal court, state court?
Whatever Ohio does for divorce, whatever it is, or if it's Supreme, or whatever.
Again, that's kind of family court type thing also. I mean, that's all corrupt. None of that stuff. Well, look, they could deal with divorce a lot different. I know you and I have spoken a lot about these things, but they can deal with this. The whole family system needs to be dealt with differently because it's an assault and they don't explain things. Well, you can really get this done through arbitration. And the arbitration, you know, if one person is just unreasonable, they can push it into the Supreme Court to get enforcement that they make them be reasonable or whatever the case may be. But generally speaking, the system assaults whoever comes in there. It's all about money. They're raking in money. And they even require that you pay.
That's what I'm saying. If you came in there and you were for lack of a better term, a sovereign citizen.
They have no clue what you're talking about. They think you're a nut. Those people are dumb. They don't know what you're talking about.
It doesn't matter if they think you're a nut. If you actually are outside your authority.
How do you think you're going to get success if they think you're a nut? Do you think they're going to rule in your favor?
If you don't even have to physically be there because you're not under their authority.
Well, then they're going to move along without you. I don't know I don't know how they would go about dealing with that problem. I mean, they do put people in jail for not responding to their requirements. I mean, we've spoke about that too before. The thing is this. If you want to build a case, you build a case, you make it strong, and you figure you're going to go through the appellate process. And even if you fail all the way up the line through the appellate process, you can resurrect that court once we get courts of justice back because you didn't get your due process. Anytime that they, you know, railroad you and they open up a chancery court, because those are chancery courts, okay, that's what they are. They're administrative chancery courts. And you can force the whole process into the Supreme Court. They'll do a lot of resistance, and maybe they won't let you get in there, but you should be able to get in there to work a divorce court. But again, they do have a pretty good system laid out. They're just not very, as far as divorce court is concerned, they're just not very good at dealing with people. They come in with power and authority, and they rule over you. And there's a lot of money to be made by the collections and the movement of money. And they got to keep the lawyers making money. There's money for everybody there. This whole thing is operated by money. They're not operating it by justice. That's the problem.
Okay. All right.
We're not going to get anywhere in those courts. It's so difficult. But again, if you build a good case, you can not only take it up the appeals process, which, again, you probably lose anyway to that, but the thing is, if it's a really good, solid case, when justice courts reopen, and I do believe we can have that if we do what we have to do and convince enough people of what the law really is, because even the people on the administration, you know, Trump's administration, they don't really understand the law. They don't. A lot of them are lawyers, and he's got lots of lawyers too, but they know civil law is what they know. They don't know common law. They don't know the real law. But with what they're doing in their cases, a lot of that is they're working with statutes that do apply concerning the presidency. So, you know, that's where they do shine in that. And that's proper too.
All right. Thank you for your time.
Okay. Good night.
Good night, all right. All.
Come to the end of our program. Good night, everybody. Thanks for coming. Hopefully we'll see you next Monday, and take it from there. Good night.
Well, amen. Bye-bye.
Let me shut this record off. Hold on a second. Got to shut the